Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, thanks for the sunshine.
Yeah, it helps, right? Having that sun out helps. And computer models are saying a couple of 90s here, first few days of June. We'll see if the models are right. You know, it's good to be skeptical of all models. But it's warming up. It's getting better out there. And, Jure, I think the number one story, at least for us for this show, is hydroxychloroquine. The president has been dosing up on the drug, which, again, you need a prescription. You can't just go down to Walgreens and order up some hydroxychloroquine. Yesterday, he shocked reporters who pressed him on a lack of evidence about the drug's efficacy. "Here's my evidence," the president said. "I got a lot of positive calls about it." And again, it's not recommended. It's not recommended that you use hydroxychloroquine. The largest study of its kind, a recent study, shows that hydroxychloroquine does not work against COVID-19 and could cause heart problems. It's the second study in a week to conclude that the drug does not fight the virus. So yesterday, Neil Cavuto on Fox News tackled this subject head on. Here's what Neil had to say.
"The president of the United States, just to acknowledge that he is taking hydroxychloroquine, a drug that meant really to treat malaria and lupus. The president has insisted that it has enormous benefits for patients either trying to prevent or already have a COVID-19. The fact of the matter is, though, when the president said, 'What have you got to lose?' in a number of studies, those certainly vulnerable to the population have one thing to lose, their lives. A VA study showed that among a population of veterans in a hospital receiving this treatment, those with vulnerable conditions, respiratory conditions, heart ailments, they died. That was stuff."
So you got that.
Oh, my gosh.
Look, everybody wants the magic cure, the magic pill, and there just is no scientific evidence, no overwhelming evidence yet, Jure, that hydroxychloroquine or anything else works. Remdesivir seems to shorten the symptoms by about a third, and studies show that. Fairly rigorous scientific clinical studies show remdesivir does, in fact, have an impact. There were high hopes for hydroxychloroquine, no evidence that it works, and it could make things worse in a hurry.
Prescriptions of hydroxychloroquine surged 80% in March to more than 830,000 compared with the same period last year. The jump came before the federal government accepted 30 million doses for the drug donated to the Strategic National Stockpile by foreign drug makers. Since then, millions of those tablets have been shipped to the U.S. I have many questions here because this is a prescription drug, hydroxychloroquine, and I can't even get my pediatrician to write an antibiotic unless the kids go in and get a test and I pay for all that stuff. So I hope doctors are not irresponsibly writing hydroxychloroquine. I don't know any doctor that would do that. Now, I know having access to your own personal White House doctor, that's a different story. They write you whatever you want. People like Prince or, I don't know, rock stars, whatever. Maybe they get doctors to write things like that. I just hope that people put on their critical thinking cap during this time. And just because somebody else says they're doing something, like taking hydroxychloroquine, doesn't mean you should too. Like, don't drink Clorox. Don't, you know, shine UV light down your throat. That doesn't do anything. Just because someone in power says they're doing it, we don't know if they really are. And certainly we don't know if it works. So now is the time to not be a lamb, to not be a sheep, to not blindly follow. Now is the time to say, is that something that's good for me? And if your doctor doesn't suggest it for you, it's not.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said.
We gotta be smart.
I don't know. Yeah, take it easy out there. 651-989-9226. We're not taking calls on hydroxy now, but we will be at 4:30. Give you a chance to weigh in. Good idea, bad idea. We want to hear from you at 4:30. We want to hear from Tim Lammers, who is telling us what to stream. That's coming next.
His vitals are dropping. We're losing him.
Do we really want to upload?
We could be together forever.
You're so amazing. But forever is just like so long.
Uploads that way, OR's the other way. What do you want to do?
3, 2, 1. Upload.
Sounds kind of cool. It's 3:19, Jordana and Paul. Let's talk movies. Tim Lammers' movie reviews are brought to us by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorney seeking justice for the injured. You can find them at minnesotapersonalinjury.com. And Tim joins us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Tim, this one is called Upload. Hey, sir.
Hello, Jordana, and hello, Paul, and our friend Mike Bryant actually got this one on my radar. It's on Amazon Prime Video. It's really an ingenious show, Upload, set not too far in the future here, 2033. It's about an alternate destination where people can go when they die, but they do it by having their conscience uploaded to a digital destination, which is actually a swanky resort. So we have this character, Tom Cruise lookalike, Robbie Amell. You might have seen him in some CW shows. He goes there. He's a young fella. He doesn't believe, you know, he has a lot more of life to live. He senses something weird about the place right away. It's not perfect, and the circumstances surrounding his death are really shady. So it's really an ingenious show. I am loving it so far. I think I'm through like 6 or 7 episodes. There's 10 episodes. The show has actually been renewed for a season 2 on Amazon Prime. That's how big of a hit it is for them.
Tim, the notion of a digital afterlife sounds good to me, but knowing my luck, it would be all spam and malware. And
well, I could tell you, Paul, it always seems like it's always sunny in the digital afterlife. So
your
job
never
would
storms.
Probably be pretty boring there. Unless, of course, you got a programmer to change things up for you. So, and there's a programmer involved in this one, played by this wonderful actress her name is escaping me right now, but Andy Allo is her name. And actually, I read that she was actually a member of Prince's New Power Generation band at the time. But she's terrific, wonderful cast, again, quirky enough. The quirk sort of reminds me of, and again, Mike Bryant made this comparison. He told me, he says, this reminds me a lot of Pushing Daisies. I don't know if you saw that show on ABC back in 2007, 2008. Hmm. But a wonderful show, Anna Friel, Lee Pace, Kristen Chenoweth, and it was really quirky. I prefer that show to this one, to be quite honest, but this one keeps you guessing. It's ultimately a murder mystery, so I like that. So it's one of those shows where you got to pay attention and something's eventually going to play out.
What struck me, Jor, is that he dies in a self-driving car accident. So kind of a cautionary tale for all of us looking forward to that. I found it quirky, upbeat, optimistic, and refreshing, unlike our next show, which I found to be depressing and a little raunchy, unnecessarily raunchy.
If we change the way that movies are made,
coffee, Miss Lala?
I think you can change the world. I want you to be the star.
Really? If you want something, you have to declare it.
I'll do anything.
I am not just a star. I am a star maker.
All right, everyone, roll camera.
I liked this, Tim. I started it with Handsome Husband. It was just too much sex. And
yeah. Yeah.
Not that we don't appreciate sex, but it was everyone was having sex with everyone all the time.
Yeah.
And they were having lots of extramarital sex. They were having all sorts of different kind of relationship sex. And it was just too much. I was like, show me the movies.
Yeah. You know what? This doesn't surprise me, though, coming from Ryan Murphy, who is a very provocative television creator. He did American Horror Story. He did the American Crime Stories. Nip Tuck way back in the day. I mean, we know how all those shows are, especially when it comes to gratuitous stuff. And yes, sex is at the center of this. You know, Hollywood looks like a complete cesspool after World War II and the Golden Age, where people would do anything to get a break in Hollywood. And yeah, it made my skin crawl. And you know, it's interesting when you get a guy like Jim Parsons from the Big Bang Theory, who is so likable, all of a sudden playing this scummy Hollywood agent who is just completely hateable. And that's how good of an actor he is, though. But, you know, yeah, look, if you have any aspirations about going to Hollywood, even though this is a revisionist Hollywood tale, this might change your mind, because this is, I mean, I hope it wasn't this bad, but look, it's got to be based on something, right?
I guess. It just seems to me like they exaggerated. Hey, while we have you, Tim, I want to get your take on something of a shocking development. Tom Hanks' next movie, a World War II battleship drama called Greyhound, is going directly to streaming. Kind of a sign of the times. No theater release, going to Apple TV Plus, 100 different countries simultaneously. Is this a sign of the times, the way things are going to be going forward?
You know, I'm afraid for the time being, yes. I mean, now, obviously, this is the biggest film so far that was scheduled for theatrical release, and they're going straight to Apple TV Plus, right? You know, that's an acquisition. Netflix makes acquisitions, too. They did with a smaller film called The Lovebirds. So, but this, when you get Tom Hanks involved, you're talking about a lot of potential theatrical revenue being lost now. I hope it doesn't mark a sea change, so to speak, in this particular instance, but you got to believe the theater owners are reeling over this one.
Do you think we'll ever go back? And Paul, do you think so either? I don't know. I don't know that we're ever going back to theaters.
I don't know. I mean, look, I think that Hollywood, they have an itchy trigger finger right now. Apparently, this thing was being shopped around in quiet for some time. And when, you know, nobody knows for sure when theaters are going to open again. And here's the other thing. They might open in some states, but not others. The studios want wide theatrical releases so they can make their maximum amount of money. They're not just going to play this thing in Georgia or, you know, some other state that are reopening soon. They're going to want full capacity. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there. It just seems to me like this is a sort of movie they could have held on to, because you got Hanks involved. You know, you're looking at potential awards consideration. So I don't know why they couldn't have held this thing for an October release or a November release, but they didn't. So I just think it's a big blow to the theater owners at this point. They're making, at least the studios can recoup money. The theater owners are getting zero from this, from a product that they were promised, but now they're not going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll see. The world is changing before our eyes, but one constant, you will always be with us on Tuesdays and Fridays. Tim Lammers, thank you for breaking it down and giving us something to look forward to.
Thank you, Paul. And yes, I will be reviewing Greyhound. It looks like in June. Well, I don't know if it's going to be possibly June, but it'll be on Apple TV Plus. So we'll be reviewing it on this segment.
Awesome, Tim. Be safe out there.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Jordana.
Thank you. You bet. Tim Lammers, movie reviews.
When you wear a mask.
What?
I'm sorry. Go right ahead. Sorry.
You want me to wear a mask all the time? It's funny because my wife said the same thing. I wear a mask now in bed, which...
Oh, God.
I think is a little bit of an overreaction, but okay. I'm obligated to say that Tim Lammers' movie reviews are brought to you by Bradshaw and Bryant, personal injury attorney seeking justice for the injured. I wonder if they wear masks.
When you wear a mask, does it make you feel different? Do you feel more protected? Do you feel less friendly? The psychology of wearing a mask with Dr. Tali Vang. That's next. Breath out, We're going to talk to the psychologist after this. So calm yourself. Get your questions, thoughts together. We're going to do what's called mudra breathing. We've done this in the past, and there's only so many breathing exercises that we can go through together. So we're going to revisit a favorite of mine. A mudra is a hand movement that sometimes we do in yoga. Maybe you've heard of it. This mudra is called chin mudra, and it is done when your forefinger and your thumb meet. So your other three fingers are straight out, meet your forefinger and your thumb. They sort of make a circle. And you can put the backs of your hands on your knees as your forefinger and your thumb meet. Palms face upward. Now just sit like this in a comfortable position. Okay, in a comfortable position. And just do some breathing. Close your mouth and just do some breathing in and out. You can feel this breath predominantly in your lower abdominal area and lower sides of your body and your lower back. In, out. And awareness here around abdominal breathing has a profoundly relaxing effect. Our emotional center is here. Our solar plexus feels calm during this practice. So it's slowing down your breathing and adding the mudra. It's called chin mudra. Again, your thumb and your forefinger are touching in a circle, and your palms are facing upward. You can do this for the next 3 hours. I hope you do while you listen to the rest of the show. But Paul and I have to get back to business. So enjoy chin mudra breathing.
Chin mudra. Very cool.
It has nothing to do with your chin, actually. Oh. It's called chin mudra. I know it's a little weird.
I do a lot of chin exercises.
Your chin must be in excellent shape.
Well, yeah. I want my chin to be looking good. Okay. Question, does wearing a mask affect our personalities, our mindsets, maybe how outgoing we are when we're in a store, when we're out in public, if we're in a mask versus not? Psychologist Dr. Tali Vang from Hennepin Healthcare joins us on the CenterPoint Energy Home Service Plus hotline. Dr. Vang, thank you for joining us today.
Hi, thank you again for having me.
And I'm going to tee up Dave Josephson. DJ kind of brought this to our attention now that you have a mouthful of apple. Sorry about that, DJ. Surprise, you're on the air. But you had a good point. I had noticed it, but you're right. Explain to Dr. Vang what you said to us.
Well, yeah, I just noticed when I go to the grocery store normally, I'm a guy that I say hi to the cashier or maybe the person, in front or behind me in line and, try to be cordial, ask them how their day was and things like that. And I've noticed that, now that I'm wearing a mask when I go to the store, I find myself not doing that. I don't crack the joke. I don't say, oh, I hope you get off soon or whatever. Like all that small talk that I would normally do in a context like a store or being out in public, for some reason, subconsciously, I don't do that. I feel like there's like a bubble around me or something. And I just wonder, is that me? Is that everybody? Is it something about the mask? Is it cultural? And I don't know the answer, but I hope that Dr. Vang can shed some light on that.
What do you think, doctor? Is there something there?
Yeah, I would be happy to address that, definitely. And one of the reasons why is because when we are out and about, and if we're wearing a mask, then the mask serves as a constant reminder of this pandemic that we are in. And so it's a stimulus, it's a visual and a tactile cue that there is this pandemic going on, and we're having to be more careful. And so it does act as a step or a barrier to our social interaction, even though it's with good reason. So that means that if we want to be cordial and be social and make those comments, we will have to actually be more intentional about our social interactions when we're out and about.
Okay.
Does it make you, when you wear a mask, I feel like I'm being more responsible, certainly, when I wear a mask. But I agree with David that I smile less because nobody can see me. But do you think that it changes the interactions then that you're having with people who aren't wearing a mask? And are we going through this era of mask shaming? Have you seen this? Have you heard this? Have you talked to people about this?
Yeah. It's really different for everyone because different people have different takes on whether to wear a mask or not wear a mask, and they have their own reasons. And it does bring about some cognitive dissonance when we're out and about. If someone is wearing a mask and if I'm not wearing a mask, then what are they thinking about me and vice versa? And so it makes us a lot more cautious because then we're reading into a lot of these social cues and social signs that we never really had to before in the past. And so it does make us more aware, alert, and cautious. And when we're cautious and alert, we're less likely to be loose and talk and just socialize and meet new people and be nicer to strangers. And so, I notice when I go to the grocery stores, people are kind of just about their business. They get what they need, and then they're out of there. There's less of this interacting.
Interesting. Dr. Vang, talk about mental health for people who have COVID or close friends and family members of people who've had COVID. My mother-in-law is recovering. Josephine is doing great. Lori, what is she on, day 32 or something? 32 days since she was diagnosed, but I know it sent, a shockwave through the extended family, and it made us much more conscious of what's going on. It really brings it home when somebody in your family catches this thing. What have you noticed in terms of mental health?
Yeah, I'm so glad that your mother-in-law is doing better. And I've noticed that there is such a big stigma with maybe having the diagnosis of COVID or knowing someone that has been diagnosed with COVID-19, that people aren't reaching out as much. And it's usually a time when family members, when people who are affected by the virus needs to have that additional support. And so what I'm noticing is that stigma kind of takes hold of the families or of the persons that are being affected. And so they are feeling even more isolated than before. And so one of the things that I really want to make sure people, listeners know is this is if you are diagnosed with the virus, or if you have loved ones that have been diagnosed, this is the time that you should be reaching out the most for additional support, for emotional support. There's a lot of services out there that are have been advertised about providing food for people who've been affected by the virus. Don't be afraid to reach out and really actively fight against whatever stigma that may be associated with the virus.
Okay.
Dr. Tali Vang with Hennepin Healthcare, thank you so much for your expertise. It's always very calming when we talk to you. Thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you for having me.
You got it. Sloan Martin recaps the Minnesota Department of Health daily COVID-19 briefing. That's up next on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Troubling, disturbing, very heartbreaking stories that we heard, and a lot of empathy for them. But what we're dealing with right now is a situation where the hospitals are trying to balance the ability to get supplies with the need for supplies immediately, and along with that, also anticipating what we might need in the future. And so I think that all of these things become a balancing act, and they're doing the very best that they can to provide what the nurses need today with an eye to the future for what they might need tomorrow.
You're listening to a soundbite from the Department of Administration Commissioner and head of Minnesota's Critical Care Supply Working Group, Alice Roberts Davis, reacting to nurses' testimony during the House Select Committee on Minnesota Pandemic Response and Rebuilding. That was a lot of information to give you in the first lead, and thankfully, our own Sloan Martin is here to break down what happened today at the Minnesota Department of Health daily COVID-19 briefing. Sloan, welcome back to the program.
Hey, thanks. Hello to both of you. It was definitely emotional, and you heard it there from Commissioner Roberts Davis, where you're hearing nurses talk about fear for themselves, fear for their loved ones, worried about what they're bringing home each day, living with either parents or children who have serious underlying conditions and worrying about what's going to happen to them. And one part that really struck me was when President Mary Turner, president of the Nurses Union, said, I dread the day that I will have to announce the death of a nurse in Minnesota because they weren't properly protected. So a lot of focus on that today in the MDH media briefing. And a lot of this balance, like you heard from Robert Stavis, between the ideal use of PPE versus this new form of conservation that nurses say what would have been unacceptable in January is now completely normal. And MDH and other state officials are saying they completely understand these concerns. Nurses also saying that they are concerned about the addition of elective surgeries. And that's where you see a little bit of tension too, because the Department of Health says too many people have been going for too long without medically necessary procedures. So a lot to balance here. You have the nurses who are fearful on the front lines and wanting to protect them, with also what's happening in the supply chain that has never really caught up, and trying to pressure those health systems to provide that proper PPE. So a lot of different sides going on here.
Sloan, at a time when there's debate about, you know, even how we count the numbers of victims of COVID-19, some people say we're undercounting, other people say we're overcounting. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you're home and you have chest pains and you decide not to go to the emergency room because you don't want to be anywhere near a hospital in the age of pandemic out of fear, and you die at home, technically, that is not a COVID-19 death. But just think of how many people are purposely putting off going to the hospital, even when they are in dire need of a specialist, of a physician. Has that come up? I mean, that seems to be an ongoing challenge.
No, it for sure is. And MDH has spoken about how they are counting these deaths. And even if you look at the state dashboard, they are now showing not only confirmed deaths that had a positive case, but also probable deaths as well. So where they believe that it stemmed from COVID-19, but there was no positive case by the time that death occurred. But what you talked about also made me think of another message that MDH is putting out there. Not only people who are avoiding emergency rooms, those medically necessary procedures, just staying out of really any medical setting, that's also affecting well child visits to the doctor for young kids who are getting behind on their childhood vaccinations. So MDH says to for everyone involved, whether it's a child or someone who is experiencing serious and severe COVID symptoms, to get to a doctor and seek medical attention.
Sloan, let's talk a little bit about elective surgeries, because this is another thing the nurses say is it's not okay. They don't want this to start. Is that right?
They say we're not in a place yet. We're not ready. And if they are already in a place right now when there hasn't been elective surgeries and they're already having to dangerously ration PPE. One example a nurse used was having to keep a mask in a little plastic baggie for days at a time to try and reuse as many times as possible. And this new way of conserving PPE, which is far from ideal for them in terms of safety, and what that means when we have new procedures coming back. So that's maybe going to put more people back to work, people in other facets of the healthcare system who were laid off or lost work with the ending of elective surgeries early on. But I think they're concerned that that's just going to exacerbate this rationing of PPE already. Now, MDH says it's going to be up to these medical systems to responsibly and accurately gauge their own capacity to do those elective surgeries. And we're not talking about things that may seem frivolous. We're talking about serious surgeries here that could be affecting and improving people's lives that have been put off for weeks and even months.
Sloan, as we reopen Minnesota's economy, there's going to be an ongoing concern about a resurgence, another wave, a second wave, but we really won't know that, what we're doing now, what effect it's going to have, for another 2, 4, 6 weeks, according to the experts. And I know the case numbers, the number of positive cases is going up, and that's probably a function of the testing, right? Everybody keeps saying to watch the number of hospitalizations, that may be a better indicator of what's really happening than just the number of positive cases.
Yeah, there's a lot of metrics, Paul, that they are looking at. And you bring up the hospitalizations. Minnesota just saw its single day high of 57 into the hospital yesterday. Too far of a sample size to draw anything from that now. It could be an example of how symptoms start off mild and then end up getting severe a little bit later on. But definitely looking at those hospitalizations, because this is all about hospital and ICU capacity, making sure that the healthcare system could withstand a surge in the number of cases that we are seeing. But they're also looking at, for example, doubling rate. That's up to 13 days. That's up from 10 a week ago and 8 days from the week prior. So that's a really positive thing, too, to see the testing go up, the testing capacity go up. 5,200 yesterday. Tuesday's usually, Monday's usually a lower day. But then also looking at that doubling rate, the rate of positive tests as well. A lot that goes into this.
Sloan Martin, thank you for the update.
We'll be right back.